Muddy Knees Media.
This news just in, listeners. The Athletic is extending its £1 a month offer for all new subscribers, meaning you can get unrivaled analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, plus a brand new breaking news service and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts for just a quid. This deal won't last forever, though, so don't miss out. Sign up today at theathletic.com/totally.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Grab your Ukraine football yearbooks and rekindle your interest in Arabic commentary, because the Champions League is back. We round up match day one from Atleti to Zenit as Europe's greatest go head-to-head. All the info you need, plus a little bit extra, because it's you, in this Totally Football Show European edition, in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. It's Tuesday, the 20th of October. I'm here with Alvaro Romeo. Hola, Alvaro.
Hola, James. How are you?
I'm very well. Also here, James Horncastle.
Sí, sí. Buenas tardes.
Rafael Honigstein.
Hello.
And Julian Rons.
Bonjour.
Bonjour to you, Jules. And as I say, 20th of October, it is day one of a brand new Champions League season. We're going deep on that today. Is everyone excited?
I'm very excited. Yeah.
Me too.
For champions! Do, 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 do. That's nice. That's not all we're going to be talking about, though, listener. Rest assured, because we've got other headlines. Like, for example, if everyone could just give me a quick one-liner on some other massive story from their league. Alvaro?
Well, it has to be that Real Sociedad is topping the Spanish table, which is very, very impressive. We have had six different leaders in as many games in La Liga.
Wow. What about in Italy, James?
There isn't a new king in Milan, James. There is a god. And that is Zlatan.
Yes.
Who was very much the match winner in Saturday's Derby della Madonnina.
Well, there's a god in Milan. The goddess had a bit of a rough weekend. We'll hear about that later on. Raf, Schalke fans are on the march.
They're marching, although Schalke actually got a draw, which is, you know, not too bad against Union Berlin, but still without a win in how many games now? Since January, in any case.
Wow.
That was one of the big stories, but it was actually a weekend without big stories. Lots of small ones, though.
And that in itself was the story. What about in Ligue 1, Jules?
Lille are the new leaders. They're the leaders after winning the Derby du Nord against Lens.
Kings in the North.
Exactly. That's how they also celebrated it. 4-0. Lens had two red cards, but it was a really strong performance from Lille, who are still unbeaten in Ligue 1. 5 wins and 2 draws.
Wow. We're going to fit all that into today's show, along with a forensic examination of the first round of the Champions League, which all begins next with a quick trip to Paris.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Les espaces en milieu maintenant, bien sûr.
Avec Kylian Mbappé face à René, super. Kylian Mbappé, magnifique.
Paris Saint-Germain, listener, 4-0 winners this weekend against Nîmes and hosting Man United this evening, if you're listening on Tuesday. Jules, you don't need me to remind you what happened last time Man United came to visit. I can if you like.
Rashford pour frapper avec la frappe et c'est au fond. Il était parti du bon côté Buffon, mais le penalty de Rashford pour l'instant est en train d'envoyer Manchester en quart de finale de la Ligue des Champions et d'éliminer le Paris Saint-Germain.
Why is this time going to be different if you think it is?
It's a good question. I mean, I think it would be different because to start with, it's not a knockout stage game. So, you know, it's, even if United win, PSG can still qualify for the last 16. So you certainly won't have the drama and the trauma potentially for PSG than the one 18 months ago. I think, however, it's very important psychologically for PSG to put things right after what happened at the Parc des Princes. However, I still believe that the way PSG play, and we heard Thomas Tuchel at lunchtime during his press conference saying you know, we want to control the ball, we want to control the game, have a lot of possession, which means that United will have to play on the counter-attack, which is what they prefer. So I think this game and the way PSG play is perfect for United. Can United do again what they did 18 months ago? I'm not so sure. And they certainly will, I think, concede a lot of chances too, because this PSG team going forward is so strong. But I also think that United will create some chances. So it will, I think, go down to who takes them the best.
Well, 3-1. Rather unexpectedly, it was for Man United when they visited in March 2019. Since then, Paris Saint-Germain have gone on to become Champions League finalists, while United, on the back of that result in Paris, handed the job to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer with kind of ups and downs along the way ever since. What does everybody think about United's prospects in this game?
I don't think they have a chance of winning Champions League. I think that they can still be competitive in the direct duels, but they have this big problem, Manchester United, that they've got many players underperforming, and I think that this is unacceptable in Champions League, and especially if you have a defense in which no defender seems to be tremendously reliable, and they've got this team in which the best players are not doing their best football. We don't know if Paul Pogba is going to play like against France, with France the other day, or like with Manchester United many days. We don't know if the attacking trio of Manchester United will be capable of being at their best. And I believe that if you want to be competitive in the Champions League or even in the Parc des Princes, you have to have more certainties in your team.
That United defence up against Mbappe, who got another brace this weekend, but also Neymar, who was rested in the 4-0 win on Friday. It's quite a thought. Ages.
It is, and in fairness, Mbappe is, I don't know, he's just looking so good. I mean, Ligue 1 is too easy for him. We've known that for a long time now, but he still seems to be taking his level up again. I thought he was incredible on Friday night against Nîmes, considering he just played 2 days before with France against Croatia and 3 days before that with France against Portugal. And I just think that he doesn't look tired. I mean, everything he does pretty much is spot on. It's really impressive. And I think, like I said before, I do think that Neymar is playing very good as well at the moment. We saw Rafinha for his debut doing really well. Danilo Pereira could start as well on Tuesday night because Marco Verratti is out, Paredes is out as well, so that might be a good option for Tuchel in midfield. It's just that it's a really good time, I think, for PSG, and Angel Di Maria is back from the suspension in the league, so there's a lot of good things. However, I still think that psychologically there's a bit of trauma from that defeat against United, and I just don't know how they will approach the game.
If the comparison between Ronaldo, the Brazilian, and Mbappé ever made any sense, you have to see Mbappe's first goal last Friday, because it resembled Ronaldo perfectly, the way he rounded up the goalkeeper to score. It was a fantastic goal.
The only thing is, Ronaldo was always a number nine. You know, he played as a kid as a number nine. You could clearly see that everything he did was from holding the ball up to the runs that he could make. Everything was just, he was the pure centre forwards. Kylian Mbappe, I don't think, has the same bearings as a number nine than Ronaldo had. You know, this is a winger pretty much since a very young age, who never really played centre forward, or when he did play centre forward, always played as a second striker next to Falcao, for example, or next to Giroud with the national team. And I don't think that his attributes are really the ones of a proper real number nine. And I think he will work on it, and he might become the best number nine in the world at some point. But right now, I still think you can see in his game that he's just not ready for that. That's why he naturally goes a bit more on the left-hand side than really staying in the centre with two centre-backs behind him. His older play is not that good. His linker play is not often good when he has to play back to goals, because I just think this is all new for him still. And he's only 21. So, but at times, you're right, technically and in terms of skills, he's very close to the Ronaldo. The
you heard
Ronaldo.
It here first. Kylian Mbappe, terrible player from Julian Laurence.
It's a really good point I made, and you made a joke out of it, but it's a really good point, you know. He's not just there yet in his evolution from a wide player to a centre forwards.
He will improve at Real Madrid next season.
So Group H is an interesting one. The presence of RB Leipzig in here, surprise semi-finalists, last season in the Champions League, suggests that any drop points, even though this isn't a knockout game per se, could be catastrophic for either PSG all Man United's prospects are getting out of the group. RB Leipzig, who will be facing Başakşehir, fresh themselves from a 2-0 win over Augsburg this weekend, which featured a goal from Yusuf Poulsen that made commentators do this.
Bock, diese Abwehr zu beschäftigen, und die werden viel zu tun haben, ihn jetzt zu bändigen. Und jetzt geht auch schon der Tor!
Was war? Yusuf Poulsen! Tor für RB Leipzig!
Aus dem Nichts!
Alter Schwede, was für eine Bude!
RB Leipzig, Rafa, top of the Bundesliga, not missing Timo Werner at all.
No, and that's the main story of the first four games of the season. As you said, 10 points. They look very good. They look more efficient in possession. They've also increased their possession. So they've become more of a Nagelsmann team, if you will, now in his second season. And of course, you know, it's impossible to say whether Timo Werner in the team would have perhaps even have them play better. But they have found ways of making up for his departure, mostly through just adding midfielders. Paulsen scored the goal, but he didn't start. They had this system where they played three attacking midfielders instead of a striker, with Forsberg, Dani Olmo and Christopher Nkunku playing in as three forwards effectively. And it helps them keep the ball, but it also, I think, makes it sometimes a little bit difficult to have that presence in the box. So a team still developing, a team still improving. And I think they have a chance. You'd still favour PSG and Man United to go through, but if for whatever reason they should slip up, and I don't think losing the game necessarily is a big deal on Tuesday if then the losing side goes and wins the reverse fixture. But if, for example, PSG or Man United drop points against Başakşehir here, then I think Leipzig will be in a position to take advantage of that.
Rafa, meantime, what about Dortmund, who Tuesday night are away at Lazio? Dortmund currently lying third, just a point behind RB Leipzig, following their 1-0 win at Hoffenheim this weekend in the Bundesliga, which saw the return of Marco Reus with his first goal since January.
Yeah, he and Erling Haaland came on late in the game to really make the difference. Dortmund with a wholesale rotation. Some of it enforced through injuries, some of it because ahead of this big game against Lazio, the Ciro Immobile derby, coming back to the place where he didn't enjoy a very productive season when Jurgen Klopp was still there, famously complained that nobody took him out for dinner and none of his teammates.
Germans are cold, Raf. That's been my experience as well.
Yeah. The problem for Dortmund going into this game is that they don't have any players left at the back. Emre Can is suspended, going back through to a red he picked up for Juventus last season. Zagadou is injured. Akanji tested positive and won't be risked because Dortmund want to first see how he's doing after coming out of quarantine, so he won't be back in time. So there's a chance that Delaney might still be called upon to play at the back again in this back three. Did a reasonable job against Hoffenheim, and that would be a possibility. And they're still hoping that Piszczek might come back as well. He got a smack in the face and injured his eye against Hoffenheim, but I think he'll be able to play. So, yeah, it'd be really interesting. I think one of the best games of match day one between two sides who are perhaps not perfect and have flaws, but I think those flaws will make it for such an entertaining game.
Yeah, Lazio got more flaws than the Shard right now, eh, James Horncastle? losing this weekend 3-0 to Sampdoria. If you lose 3-0 to Sampdoria, what's going to happen when you take on the likes of Haaland, Sancho, Joe Reyna, and now Marco Reus as well?
Well, this is the thing. Lazio, even though they addressed some of the lack of depth, let's say, that they're squad has, which really came to the fore after lockdown, and they collapsed afterwards, they still look vulnerable. It looks like something has happened there where maybe after 4 or 5 years of working under Simone Inzaghi, I wouldn't say something's gone stale between him and the players, because I think there's a very good tight-knit group there. But certainly between him and the owner, Claudio Lotito, in this moment in time, Inzaghi complaining that they didn't do enough in the transfer window. Remember, there was the whole David Silva situation where Silva was supposed to sign and then basically jilted them and went to Real Sociedad. They wanted to sign Marash Kumbula from Hellas Verona, one of the most promising centre-backs in the league. He ended up going to Roma instead. And Inzaghi, who basically said, look, I might sign a new contract after the end of the transfer window, has still yet to sign a new contract. And I think that is a kind of big cloud over this team at the moment, which, a little bit like Dortmund, is depleted. I think that was one of the reasons why they flopped so badly against Sampdoria at the weekend. They were without their two kind of first-choice wing-backs. They were without centre-backs at the moment. Immobile was suspended for that game. So I don't really know what we're going to get from Lazio in what will be their first Champions League game in almost 13 years in midweek. But yeah, as Rafa said, all eyes will be on Ciro Immobile.
3 goals in 24 matches in his one ill-fated season there in Dortmund. Just on the subject of Samp, really nice to see Papo Ranieri doing well with them. A really tough start to the season for Samp, but they're now up in the top half of the table after a couple of decent results. Lazio, meanwhile, have now lost exactly half of all their league matches since the restart of the last campaign back in June. Wow. Okay. More of the midweek games to come. And next we'll be turning our attention to Group E, which features Chelsea, Sevilla, and also Rennes and Krasnodar.
We know everyone thinks this season is going to be different, but at Paddy Power, we're staying positive because isn't the new normal just the same old football? Avoid unnecessary journeys. That's Fulham's trip to Anfield off. Self-isolate? Some strikers do that very effectively already. You see? New normal, same old football. And that's why if one leg of your 4-plus-fold Acca lets you down, you get your money back as a free bet on all football matches and all markets. The Acca Cracker from Paddy Power.
Max free bet £10, min odds 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive, exclude shop bets, T's and C's apply. 18+bgambleaware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Groupie love. Want to hear about Chelsea and Sevilla? Are Chelsea going to blow it at home to a Spanish side in their opening game like they did last season? But first of all, Jules, Rennes and Krasnodar. That's the big game.
That's the big game indeed. First ever game in the Champions League at the Roazhon Park, the stadium in Rennes. They will have fans as well because unlike in Paris or in Marseille, they're not in the red zone in France. So they're not in. They don't have the curfew from 9 p.m. in the evening. So all the PSG and Marseille game, at least for now, including Tuesday night against United in Paris, for example, will be behind closed doors. But Rennes will have 5,000 fans, which is great for them, I guess, because again, it's the first time that Champions League game will come to Brittany. They have a bright young manager in Julien Stéphane. They have obviously Eduardo Camavinga in midfield, who is, as the listeners know, the latest prodigy in France. But they also have a good, solid team, great team spirit, a bit of talent, a bit of everywhere, and they will go into this competition thinking, do you know what? Let's we have no pressure. Let's do our best and see what we can do, especially against Chelsea and Sevilla, the two strongest teams in the group. But if you start well against Krasnodar, then already you will feel good about it.
They're joint second at the moment in Ligue 1 with Paris Saint-Germain behind Lille. Is there a little bit of a sense that they're kind of in the Champions League on a technicality because the league happened to stop kind of midway through and they, you know, the music stopped and they were near an empty chair, as it were?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that had you played the last 10 games of the season, a team like Lille or even maybe Lyon could have easily come back and snatched that third place off them. But they're there. They're certainly very happy. Remember the story when they were sure to be straight into the group stage and not having to go through the qualifiers thanks to what happened in the Europa League. And then at 3 a.m. in the morning, the guys in the stadium, they had a party and they played the Champions League anthem so loud that all the neighborhood could hear because they were so happy to be there. So they will certainly, you know, be happy to be there. And even if they not completely deserved it, they had a good recruitment to make sure that they could, you know, do good in the competition and I guess, make French football proud.
Mm, excellent. All right, elsewhere in this group, though, it is Chelsea against Sevilla. I mentioned Chelsea beginning last season with that defeat at home to Valencia. Sevilla, a team more than capable of defeating an English side, as they proved in the Europa League last year, doing Wolves, doing Man United, before that 3-2 victory over Inter in the final. Alvaro, Sevilla.
Yeah, good team, as you know. They haven't played in the Champions League for a couple of years because Valencia took that place of Sevilla in 2019 and in 2020. I believe that this is a good chance for Sevilla to prove themselves finally in Champions League. They've done great in the Europa League. They've won 6 titles this century. But in Champions League, they never made it through the quarterfinals. And I believe that this time there is a good feeling about them because they are basically the core of the group that won the Europa League last season. And last season means 2 months ago. Not big changes have been applied to the team. They are really similar. If anything, the goalkeeper now is confirmed that is Bono over Vaklic, which is something that a year ago didn't happen. Rakitic has been all right, but Vanegas, compass and control of the game is still quite missed. And then Luke de Jong, a striker who was under the microscope for the last 6-7 months, now he's Sevilla's number 9 and he has fortified his status as Sevilla's striker because he's scoring goals. So I think that this is a good time for Sevilla. There are a few questions or question tags that we have to answer. Whether Acuña will be the 75% of what Reguilón was, this is something that we don't know yet. And let's see if Lucas Ocampos can start playing to his best level, because nor with Argentina, neither with Sevilla this season, he has been capable of replicating the level that he shown in July and in August. But overall, I think that Sevilla has a real chance of coming out first of this Champions League group. Let's see, obviously, how injuries play out for them. For example, this time, Jules Koundé, the best defender of Sevilla by far, he won't be in the game. He's out due to COVID-19. And yeah, these little details may obviously hinder Sevilla a little bit, but I am quite confident about them. I mean, they lost against Granada this weekend. Yes, that's true. But at the same time, they were playing with 10 men for the whole second half as well, because Joan Jordan was sent off.
How confident are the Spanish or are people in Seville about their prospects against the Chelsea team that concedes, what is it, 1.5 goals per game under Frank Lampard?
And 3 corners, usually as well.
Is that right?
Yeah, but I think that I cover Premier League as well, and I know that Sevilla fans are rather pessimistic until they win. They are always demanding more from their team. So I am guessing that they won't be entirely happy until they win a title, because it's always like this with Sevilla. May I remind you that in February 2020, there were many, many voices in Sevilla that wanted Lopetegui out because the team wasn't playing well. So that's what Sevilla is like. But I see Chelsea every weekend, and I know that Chelsea is the kind of team that would please the eye of an impartial fan. And Sevilla would be the kind of team that pleases the eye of someone who likes balance, control, someone who is more tactical. So I think that these two styles are going to clash in Stamford Bridge, and I'm really looking forward to it, because I think that Sevilla is definitely capable of containing and stopping a little bit Chelsea's never-ending attacking possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Well, many games that look like they might be entertaining on Tuesday. And indeed, the other group that's going to be in play later on this day is Group G, which features two very big European names, both of whom are struggling so far under new management, Barcelona and Juventus.
Two OGs.
Yeah. So who do you want to start with? Should we start with Juventus, whose trip to Kiev is suddenly looking like a very delicate fixture, James? Andrea Pirlo, who's come in, a completely novice manager, no real time to prepare the team. Not a lot of training time in between matches either. He's got Cristiano Ronaldo out with a COVID-19 positive. And without him, the team only managed a 1-1 draw against the bottom team in Serie A this weekend.
Yeah, against Crotone. And I think we do have to factor in that, yeah, the team that he has, I wouldn't say settled on because it's still early days, but yeah, the likes of Chiellini, can you rely on Chiellini to be fit, play every 3 days? I think one of the reasons why he didn't play at the weekend was because he played for Italy. You've got McKennie, who's also got COVID, and McKennie was starting in midfield for the first couple of games that they played. Ramsey as well, who came back from international duty with Wales injured. And of course, Ronaldo, and we're yet to see Dybala yet, because Dybala has had an injury, suffered one in the game prior to playing against Lyon in the Champions League last time around. has had a stomach bug, didn't play at the weekend. So in some respects, I would say feel some sympathy for Juventus, but they do have a very deep squad. But I think one of the curious things about Pirlo is he's very willing to go and look at the under 23 team that they've got, which was the team he was supposed to be coaching this year. I mean, they played this guy Frabotta, who plays on the left side of midfield as a left wing back. He started again against Crotone. They played Portanova, who's another midfield player, son of Daniele, ex player. He was starting against Crotone as well. So you had a very young Juventus team, but one that wasn't particularly convincing. They lack tactical discipline, this team, and I think if you win the ball back from them and then play forward quickly, all of a sudden you find yourselves in acres of space and in sort of 3v2s against the likes of Chiellini and Danilo, who's not a centre-back, and they can be got at. So it is quite concerning, I would say, because going up against the venerable wise man of European football, Michail Lucescu, at Dynamo Kiev, who I think maybe was in charge briefly when Pirlo was at Brescia.
That's right. It was Lucescu who gave Pirlo his debut as a 16-year-old.
Here we go. We've got very much master and pupil. Mm-hmm. And look, Kiev have got some... Yeah, they've come through the playoffs. They've got some of the players who were part of the under-20 World Cup winning team that Ukraine had in 2019, like Supreyaga, their 20-year-old striker, who Andriy Shevchenko has taken under his wing for the national team. Very quick player. Which, you know, I think if Juventus are looking to dominate the ball and play in their opponent's half, there's going to be space for Dinamo to break into. So yeah, this loose Juventus team, I think, will give up some chances.
Mm. What's Juve's reaction been to Ronaldo testing positive, given that he was under quarantine in Turin before the international break, then took a private plane to go and join Portugal, breaking local quarantine regulations, only to then catch, presumably, the virus while he was out there and thus miss the Crotone match and this opening Champions League game?
Well, as with other things that have happened with Cristiano Ronaldo whilst he's been at Juventus, they have defended him, protected him. They haven't commented on it. Yeah, I think this is a matter for him. He wasn't the only one who, it's alleged, broke protocol after the non-game against Napoli and basically left before they should have to go on international duty. There are a few of the South Americans who went away, did exactly the same. And Ronaldo is the one who has come back positive. It did lead to quite an ugly spat between him and the Minister of Sport, Vincenzo Spadafora, who basically came out and said, look, I think that Cristiano Ronaldo has broken the restrictions that we have put in place. Ronaldo came out on Instagram and said he absolutely didn't. He took a hospital jet back, all these other things, yeah, that he claims shows he was above board. But I think, as you mentioned earlier, James, the bone of contention is the circumstances in which he left Italy, when he perhaps should have still been observing quarantine, or observing that little kind of bubble environment that Juventus put in place after they had two positives prior to the Napoli game.
Dinamo have Viktor Shankov, have I said that right, Alvaro, who scored in Ukraine's shot 1-0 defeat of Spain in the Nations League last week. Are Kiev going to do Juve, do you think, Tuesday night? Are they going to spring the big surprise?
Well, yeah, because I think still question marks really about the kind of protection in front of Juventus' defence. Federico Chiesa, we should mention, made his debut for Juventus after his deadline day transfer from Fiorentina, set up a goal and got sent off. So I imagine he'll be playing in this game prior to his suspension next week. I think the big thing as well, which is a positive, I suppose, for Juventus, Alvaro, is that your namesake, Alvaro Morata, actually played pretty damn well in that game. Scored a goal, set up a chance for Portanova, hit the post, had a goal disallowed. So, yeah, they're going to be looking to him, I think, again in the absence of Ronaldo to hurt this Dinamo defence. But yeah, I must say I'm not overly confident. You know, as Rino Gattuso, the Napoli coach, said, the reason why Napoli really wanted to play that game and not stick around and hang around in Naples and basically not fulfil that fixture is they think that Juventus are vulnerable at the moment.
Mm. This was the game from the previous round when Napoli didn't go because of local health advice and have currently been docked 1 point and seen the game awarded to Juve as a 3-0 victory. All right, well, that's coming up Tuesday night. And the other game in that group, meanwhile, sees Barcelona, with Ronald Koeman fresh from his first defeat as Barcelona manager, hosting the Hungarian side, Ferencváros, managed by Sergi Rebrov. Ferencváros have had a busy time, but already in Europe this campaign. They overcame Djurgården back in August, then beat Celtic, and then they defeated Dinamo Zagreb before putting out Mulder to finally claim a place in the group stages. Hey, it's not a bad time to be playing Barcelona, is it, Alvaro?
I really don't know what to say. Barcelona is still a work in progress. They can produce a display like they did against Villarreal in the first game of the season, or play against Getafe the other day. They weren't that bad. I mean, playing against Getafe and losing against Getafe at their ground is not so strange given the current level of Bordalás's team. So I think that Barcelona, as I said before, they are still trying to consolidate a group of players that they can be competitive again after what happened against Bayern back in August. And I think that they will manage to negotiate the Champions League, and this week is very important for them because they are playing in Champions League as well, and every money from the victory will be welcome for Barcelona because the club has asked the players again to reduce their salaries, and also because they are playing against Real Madrid at the end of the week. So this week is quite important to know exactly what the level of Koeman's project is and how far into this work in progress we are. I believe that there are some players that they can still give more at Barcelona. Lionel Messi has been all right, but he hasn't been anywhere near his best. In fact, from the restart in June, he has scored only 5 goals from open play, which is not much to his standards. Then Antoine Griezmann, we all know that he's not doing great at Barcelona. And at this point, the faith on him is only based on his past performances before signing for Barcelona, but not on what he has done for the club. So Messi and Griezmann can do more, definitely. And the young players, they have to adapt to Ronald Koeman because Koeman seems to be up for it and seems to be up to give them chances. Serginho Dest or Pedri, a guy who played in the second division last year, they seem to be important for Koeman as well. So, yeah, they are amalgamating the style, trying to mix some youth with some veteran players, and I'm still very curious about how this is going to end up being for Barcelona. I believe that at least this season, Barcelona fans have some expectations. And last year, it was difficult to have some. So, yeah, I think that Barcelona will negotiate this group stage. It's not going to be easy, but they will manage to do it. But the question is, how competitive are they going to be in the knockout stages? Because last season, they struggled against Napoli at the San Paolo. Mm. And then
knockout stages, is it?
Sorry?
I know, I'm saying knockout stages, is it?
Yes.
You've got 6 games in the group to go before you get there, Alvaro.
Yeah. No, I know, but the thing is that
team beaten 8-2 in their last Champions League outing. We'll see.
Such a project big picture mentality there from Alvaro. Honestly.
No, but I mean, I'm just looking at the past performances, and Barcelona always managed to negotiate the group stage as far as I can remember. So I think that Ferencváros and Dinamo Kiev are not going to be teams that are going to leave Barcelona out of the Champions League yet, but I want to see how good they are in February. At the minute, what I can tell you is that sometimes they are capable of showing some youth and vitality as well, because there are young players in there who are eager to prove themselves. Pedri, Trincao, Serginho Dest, I think that Ricky can be a very important addition to the team. But again, I mean, this is just the beginning of a new project for Ronald Koeman, and he couldn't sign the players he wanted, so he's also pretty much a parachuter at Barcelona. He has just arrived, and he needs some time.
Luchescu's 75. It's kind of amazing that someone that age is still operating when he first started coaching in this. Well, I mean, to put it into context, when you were in Italy, James.
That's true.
It's a long time ago.
Yeah, indeed. No, I remember my first season in Italy going to talk to him at Brescia as well. So,
what did you talk to him about?
I cannot remember. Presumably Brescia. anyway, he said to me, "One day, James, we'll look back on these days." So there you go. That's Tuesday, and it is rich in potential drama and incident and all sorts of intriguing storylines. And the same can be said, perhaps even more so, of Wednesday's games. We'll get on to those next, starting with one of the most intriguing of all, the Ajax-Liverpool clash.
It's the start of lockdown 2 out there, listeners, so grab your currywurst, dust up your lederhosen and fire up the umpar band. Thank you. Because it's Oktoberfest and our friends at Beer 52 want to celebrate the world's biggest beer festival by giving all Totally listeners a free case of 8 German craft beers. All you have to do is head to beer52.com/football and cover the cost of shipping, which is a mere £5.95. Beer 52, as you all know by now, are beer pioneers, and they've visited the finest small batch breweries in Germany to bring you ABK 6% Weissbier, Buro Brauerei's Weizen, Lemke's Spree Coast German IPA, and many, many more. Most of these beers have never, ever been seen in the UK, and with Brexit round the corner, well, it's unlikely you'll ever see them again. You can choose a light, dark, or mixed case, and the best thing with Beer 52 is that there's absolutely no minimum commitment. If you want, you can just take this free case, try the beers, and if you decide it's not for you, you can pause or cancel your subscription at any time. So head to beer52.com/football and get your free case of 8 craft beers today. That's the word beer and the number 52.com/football. One last time, beer52.com/football for Oktoberfest.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Ajax and Liverpool. Remarkably, they've only been drawn together once before in European competition. It was a two-legged last 16 tie back in 1967, which saw Liverpool go through 7-3 on aggregate. Having said that, they very nearly met in 2019 when Ajax were just seconds away from reaching a final against Liverpool before pesky Lucas Moura popped up. And since then, being Ajax, they've sold most of the stars who took them to that semi-final. De Ligt, De Jong, De Beek and Ziyech as well. So who are they this time around? How competitive are they going to be? What are the prospects against the injured Reds from Anfield? Mikael Jongsma joins us now on the line to tell us a little bit more. Hi, Mikael. How are you?
Hello, James. I'm fine. Hope you're well as well.
I am. Thank you. I say Dutch champions, but they're not technically, are they? They were on top when the Eredivisie stopped play in the middle of last, or towards the end of last season, but they were never actually awarded the title, were they?
No, but they are the most recent champions anyway, so it's the term reigning champion still applies, I think.
Hooray! Okay, well, I was just mentioning the fact that 2 years ago, or a bit less, Ajax were a whisker away from the final. Last year, they were looking good until that really surprising group stage exit on match day 6 at home to Valencia. How do they look this time around, having once again sold off a couple of really key players?
Yeah, it is a bit of an interesting situation with Ajax, because they have bought in quite some talent as well. They already signed Brazilian Anthony ahead of the whole COVID period. So he was the nailed on substitute for Hakim Ziyech, who had already signed for Chelsea at that point. And all in all, they have bought quite some interesting players. They were kind of hoping that this period would be in their favor, because they have so much potential and so many talents that are coveted by many other teams. But in the end, they did lose three key players, but they have stacked up on some amazing talent. So it's going to be interesting, but it's still very much a puzzle for Erik ten Hag to lay at this point, because they don't look as settled as they were, obviously, 2 years ago.
5-1 at the weekend, which was pretty settled against Herenveen. What are the chances of them doing that against the Liverpool side, who will arrive without goalkeeper Alisson and, of course, Virgil van Dijk?
Yeah, I mean, it won't hurt their chances, obviously, but Ajax themselves have hardly been supreme at the back themselves either, because they have never really replaced Matthijs de Ligt by a top-tier defender yet. They have Per Schuurs there, paired to Daley Blind, who's a young, promising player, but is still not at that level. But yeah, going forward, they do look interesting. And they have, I already mentioned, Anthony as a very interesting player. Dusan Tadic is still doing his thing over there. And the one that really springs to the eye in recent weeks is Mohamed Kudus, a Ghanaian player that came from FC Nordsjælland and is really lighting up the Eredivisie at the moment. Typically a player that has almost a Frankie de Jong-like skill set, but a bit farther up the pitch. So that's definitely one to get excited for. And all in all, for a team that plays in a league like the Eredivisie, their squad is just so big as well, because it's not just Anthony or Kudus, two of the main signings. It's also Davy Klaassen, who has returned from Werder Bremen. And he actually made his second debut for Ajax at the weekend and managed to score as well. So they have a lot of options, and it will be a bit of a guess to see who they will line up with against Liverpool.
Mm. Klaassen, of course, as a former Evertonian, will be feeling this fixture especially keenly. Ajax, the lone Dutch side in the competition this year, Mikael, after some, well, disappointments last time around, is there a lot of national pressure, a lot of expectation on their shoulders?
I don't think the expectations are as high as they have been. I think last year the expectations were a little bit higher. Mark Overmars internally has already mentioned that he sees this as some kind of a gap year when it comes to international success, because they've lost a lot of players since they were supposed to meet Liverpool 2 years ago. Of that side that got knocked out by Spurs, six starters are already gone. So that kind of tells you of the rebuilding job that they have to do. But all in all, yeah, I mean, Ajax are definitely operating on a completely different level compared to other Dutch sides. And outside of the top five leagues and the top sides in the top five leagues, they're probably one of the most interesting and attractive teams to play for at the moment. And that is why you see them still attracting like a really interesting talent as well. So yeah, obviously they're underdogs in this specific game, but they are still very much a force to be reckoned with.
Mikael, is it a surprise that Erik ten Hag is still the manager of Ajax when all of these star players, well, not all of them, but a lot of star players have left on the back of that Champions League semi-final appearance? He was certainly being linked with Bayern, Barcelona. Those jobs have come and gone. You know, what's the deal there?
Well, yeah, if Hansi Flick didn't turn out to be such an amazing manager, who knows where Erik ten Hag would be at this point. But yeah, it is kind of remarkable. But it also shows you that Ajax, their stature has kind of repaired itself compared to a few years ago, when even a mid-table side in the Premier League was seen as a step up for an Ajax employee. And I think we're very much past that stage at this point. It was kind of shown by Hakim Ziyech, who had good options to move away from Ajax before, but he turned down Roma and Sevilla because he didn't really like the project itself enough. And waited for a step like Chelsea. And I think for Erik ten Hag on a coaching level, it is quite similar. And even though he's a very good coach, last year wasn't that big a success, being knocked out in the Champions League quite early, being knocked out in the Europa League before COVID could strike. So it's definitely not as sweet a story as it could have been if he left in 2018-19. But he's still very much a respected coach, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him make a move after this year.
Magnificent stuff. Mikael, thank you so much for joining us, and look forward to seeing Ajax Liverpool on Wednesday night.
All the best. Bye.
Mikael Jongsma there. As he mentions, Atalanta in that group, along with Midtjylland, those two teams facing each other on Wednesday night. Are La Dea going to give everyone else a sporting head start again this year, James?
I don't know. Am I going to get some lunch? That's what I want to know.
Right.
But look, Atalanta didn't have the best of weekends.
Nope.
They got torn apart first half by Napoli. But apart from that, I mean, they've made a very, very strong start to the season. Let's not lose sight of that. They beat Cagliari 5-2. They beat Lazio 4-1. They beat Torino 4-2 as well. In many respects, they kind of picked up exactly where they left off. They hadn't lost any of their star players. Timothy Castagna went to Leicester, but he was the backup to Robin Gosens and Hans Hattabur. They sold Ahmed Diallo Traore, the teenager, to Manchester United. He's still around, but, you know, I mean, yeah, again, he's someone who's played, 26 minutes for them. And they've added lots of talent around the existing squad. So, yeah, I think it's been a pattern across Europe really this weekend that the teams that are involved in the Champions League have, with few exceptions, either drawn or lost. I'm not ready to jump off my Atalanta bandwagon or sell my stock in Atalanta as quickly as some other people are doing.
The Totally Football Shows and The Athletic are delighted to be supporting Football Aid for the months of October and November. Bid now at footballaid.com to get your hands on some incredible football memorabilia, including signed shirts from Steven Gerrard, Gianluca Vialli, Gareth Bale, and even Peter Crouch's boots. Find out more, get bidding, and support the cause at footballaid.com.
Hey everybody, you know what's exciting on Wednesday? Bayern Munich, the Champions League champions, taking on Atletico Madrid. Woof! All right, Rafa, are you excited by this?
I am excited about this. I'm not sure that Luis Suarez is after his last meeting with Bayern, but I think it should be really good.
Well, 8-2 that time, and of course subsequently Bayern went on to win the Champions League. How are they looking this time around? There's been one or two missteps just prior to the international break, but they were back on track with a 4-1 win over Arminia Bielefeld this weekend. You were suggesting, Rafa, last time out, I think, that they maybe weren't quite the side that they were back in August.
Well, Bayern did look a little bit tired going into the international break. There was that defeat against Hoffenheim where the pressing game wasn't quite right, and you felt maybe the problems at the back were being exacerbated by, you know, the midfield and the attack not working properly. But I must say I was very surprised and impressed with Bayern against Bielefeld. Bielefeld, you know, our newly promoted side, they're not the worst, they're not the best team to grace the league this season, but they still score a few goals and they might stay up. And Bayern were actually sort of near the levels that we saw them back in August when they won the Champions League. They completely overwhelmed Bielefeld. They won the ball back all the time. Müller and Lewandowski combined were totally unplayable. And Hansi Flick was still a little bit critical about one or two defensive situation. Coco Tolisso was sent off late on because Javi Martinez had misplaced the ball and he had to dive in for a professional foul, which got him a red card. But by then, Bayern had won the game and sort of taken their foot off the gas. So encouraging signs. I mean, based on the performance against Bielefeld, maybe they've overcome some of those tiredness issues and found a way to kind of deal with it, and maybe mentally also found some freshness that was perhaps missing.
Jaideep asking, what's happening with Alphonso Davies this season? Is he getting a break, or has Flick found faith in Lucas Hernandez finally?
I think there are two parts to this. First of all, I think Flick is trying to rotate as much as he can, and he wants to give players more breaks, especially those players in wide positions who have a lot of work to do. And the other reason is that Alphonso Davies had some slight issues going into the new season with injuries. So I think he's being eased back in. And Lucas Hernandez has been doing a solid job, but of course he doesn't quite offer the same dynamism and movement that Davis provides.
Is this the game of the week, do you think, Alvaro? Atletico Madrid at Bayern Munich?
Yeah, possibly. I would say that this is very important for both teams, and at the same time, the quality of them is going to contrast against their styles. I think that Bayern doesn't have a good memory of Atletico because in 2016 prevent them from reaching the Champions League final. And this
old
Atletico
news
is obviously not as good as the one in 2016, but they are work in progress as well as Barcelona are. But with Luis Suarez, every work in progress is better because he is a player who can finally score goals for Atletico de Madrid. And, end up the debate about who should play as a number nine for Atletico. This time, on top of that, Diego Costa won't be ready for the game because he got an injury this weekend in the game that they won against Celta. And this is a good time for Atletico de Madrid to go to Munich and try to get something out of them. I mean, Sevilla played against Bayern a month ago, and they made Bayern look pedestrian sometimes, or at least it was toe-to-toe.
That's a big call.
Yeah, but it happened. And I think that if, who was that? En Nesyri had scored that one-on-one with Manuel Neuer, Sevilla would be the, would have been the champion of that final. So it's going to be interesting, definitely. And I believe that Atletico de Madrid shouldn't take as granted as Barcelona should the group stage, because they were out a couple of seasons ago. I remember that Chelsea and Roma went through, and starting with a point or 3 points against Bayern would be the best start for them.
Also, if Neymar or Angel Di Maria would have scored against Bayern, they might have won the Champions League, but yeah, I wouldn't remember that now.
Yeah, if my grandmother had wheels, she would be a bike.
If my grandfather had had three balls, he would have been a pinball machine. On that note then, let's talk briefly about, or at length if you prefer, the other team from Madrid, Alvaro, who this weekend managed to lose to newly promoted Cadiz. And talking about Real Madrid, you mentioned that the Clásico is coming up next weekend, Barcelona against Real Madrid. What's going on there?
Well, I think that Real Madrid, they ended up winning the title last season thanks to a great defense, and they were able to make the most of the only goal they used to score in the game. Normally it was Karim Benzema scoring, so you know, they were following that script, winning 1-0, winning maximum 2-0, and that they couldn't score against Cadiz the other day. And in all fairness, Cadiz had like three or four really good chances to go to the halftime leading by three or four goals at Valdebebas, at Alfredo Di Stéfano ground against Real Madrid, to the point that Zidane was so angry that in the halftime he decided to change four players. Sergio Ramos, yes, because he picked an injury, but I think that he will play against Shakhtar. And the other three, because they weren't just playing well, Lucas, Isco, Modric, they were terrible. And yes, Zidane changed the team. The manager of Cádiz, Álvaro Cervera, said after the game that he thought that Real Madrid was going to be able to come back as they normally do, but he made a very good point as well. He said that playing with no fans stops home sides from coming back. It makes it more difficult for them, and it's true, because Real Madrid couldn't come back the other day against Cádiz, and Cádiz got a victory at Athletic de Bilbao ground with nine men a couple of weeks ago as well. So I think that he was humble and he was making a very fair point here. The comebacks at home are not happening the way it would happen. They would happen if the fans were at the ground. So Real Madrid are not at their best now. They are a team that have to do plenty of things collectively well, because individually they've got very few players who can make the difference. And this is a new thing at Real Madrid, because normally they have had the best players in Europe. And I really want to see how they do in what it is for me the most difficult group in the Champions League, because all the clubs, they've got a really decent level. I wouldn't say that none of them are real candidates to win the Champions League, but at the same time, they are all a 7 or an 8 or an 8 out of 10 teams. I mean, Shakhtar, if they were in the Europa League, they would be candidates to win the quarterfinals. I said before that Gladbach is quite reliable, and Inter is, you know, it's getting better and better under Conte.
Tough group, isn't it? Real Madrid traditionally have one or two wobbles at home in the group stages. We saw that with Bruges last season, Shakhtar their visitors this Wednesday. But the other two teams in the group facing each other at San Siro, Inter against Borussia Mönchengladbach. What do you make of this, James and Rafa?
Well, la partita de la Latina, as this was known back in, what, the 70s, with the can that was allegedly thrown at Boninsegna, which allowed Inter to get what was a thrashing, basically thrown out and replayed in their favour. But Inter, going into this game on the back of a derby defeat to Milan, first time that they lost to Milan in 4 years. They played well, they probably deserved the draw, but I think one of the strange things about Inter this season is they ended last season with the league's best defence, and this season they can't defend. And, you know, maybe that's because they're playing Alexander Kolarov, who is one of those veteran players that Conte likes and wanted to sign because he's got experience, and experience matters. But whether he has the experience to play in a position that really isn't his own, like a left-sided centre-back, I think remains to be seen. He has played that for Roma City, Serbia, but in the Fiorentina game, he was caught out playing there. In this game, Zlatan picked on him mercilessly and was able to take advantage. And Inter have got players out because of COVID. It's been a major problem in the preparation for that game, particularly on that side where Kolarov was playing, because they would ordinarily have Alessandro Bastoni, probably the brightest defensive talent in Italian football, playing there. He is back and really available for this this game, so that's a good piece of news. But Ashley Young, for example, I think we have to await to see whether he is going to test negative. Milan Skriniar as well, another one of their centre-backs, he tested positive. So Nainggolan too. So they've got lots of players who've been affected by the virus. I think the one encouraging thing for them is that they are scoring goals. They're scoring quite freely. They could have taken more chances. They created a lot of second half in the derby against Milan, but Lukaku looks very good. I mean, Lukaku is, I think with Hakimi on that side, I mean, Hakimi will be basically setting goals up for Lukaku at such a rate that it wouldn't surprise me if Lukaku finishes top scorer in Italy this year. In that respect, I think it's going to be an open game, as all these games are at the moment, because we're just not seeing teams able to field full strength teams. They've had a very short turnaround from one to the season to the other, and they're affected by COVID, so mental.
Rafa, how optimistic are you for Gladbach?
I'm slightly optimistic. I mean, they're not favourites. You'd pick Inter ahead of them, and even Real Madrid with their issues. I mean, Conte in the Champions League hasn't been a love affair exactly, so I have some hope for Gladbach. It's the first time for Marco Rose in the competition. You know, he's quite eager. He's been quite optimistic, quite confident in his statements, saying, you know, we don't go to make up the numbers. We approach the group stage to get out of it. But Gladbach have been in perfect form. They had a pretty dull draw against Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg are one of the best teams defensively, and they can have that effect on teams, make them look very impotent and frustrate them. But Gladbach have been all right without necessarily being on top of the form yet.
Okay. Inter, who were beaten Saturday at San Siro, a 2-1 in the derby by the so far perfect AC Milan, powered by Ibrahimovic. We'll talk about them a little bit later on. And they've got an interesting game coming up in Europe themselves on Thursday, when they will be visiting Glasgow to play as Celtic. But for now, let's just round up the final Champions League group, which is Group C, featuring Man City, Porto, Olympiakos and Olympique Marseille. It is the big Olympiakos-Olympique clash on Wednesday, while Man City take on Porto. Jules?
Yes, that's right. Marseille back in the Champions League for the first time in 6 years after finishing second last year. André Villas-Boas doing such a great job over there with limited money and budget, for example. I think he's done incredibly well. And it'd be
he's
very
used to things
to
being tight, of course.
Yeah, I mean, but it'd be very interesting to see how they do, because this is a group apart from Man City that I think they can look into and say, okay, Porto are not doing well at all in Portugal right now. Sergio Conceição is struggling a bit. He said he'd be going back to Porto, which I think would be two very special games. And I think with a bit of, you know, with a bit of luck, Marseille can have the ambition to finish maybe second in that group. So it's very, very important, I think, for them. They started the season with ups and downs. Obviously, there was the win against PSG in Paris, which was great for them. And after that, they struggled a bit more, I think, to find a bit of consistency. But certainly in terms of talent, in basically every line, they've got really, really good players. And I think if Thauvin has a good Champions League, if Camara in midfield has a good one as well, if Calhanoglu at the back has one and Mandanda in goal, they can certainly, I think, you know, beat Porto and Olympiakos and cause problems to City. So it'd be very interesting. And it's just a shame once again that they won't have any fans at all, not even 5,000, as we were explaining earlier, but just every game behind closed doors at home.
Well, first up is that trip to Paris for Marseille, while Man City host Porto on Wednesday night. Very good. Shortly, we'll be talking of Rossoneri. First of all, though, let's get some odds from Lee Price at Paddy Power.
Hello, listeners. Lee Price from Paddy Power here. Now, I'm not saying that my laziness has reached new heights, but I have found an ace new way to record this segment without having to inflict my bumbling waffle on anyone. Ah, never mind. A romantic trip to Paris seems just the ticket right now. Unless you are Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and have to hope that beating Newcastle is enough to reacquaint your fragile defence with confidence. United are lengthy 4-1 outsiders with PSG odds on to win. Speaking of a fragile defence, Liverpool face an apocalyptic future without Virgil van Dijk, according to some very dramatic people. I bet you also believed in the millennium bug. Virgil or not, the Thunderbirds are go for Liverpool. The Reds priced at 7-10 to beat Ajax.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com and the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply, and when the fun stops, stop. That redhead dude says, are we able to seriously consider Milan as genuine title challengers this season after their perfect start? Max Piacentini says, can Milan really do it? If so, would Zlatan be the oldest starting centre forward to win one of the top five leagues? Please don't include Claudio Pizarro in the discussion, says Max. Well, Milan are off to a perfect start, along with Aston Villa, the only team in the top five European leagues to do that. First time in 25 years, James, they've won their opening four games. They hadn't conceded a goal until Lukaku's this weekend in the derby. What do you think?
Yeah, very good. 20 games unbeaten in all competitions through to the Europa League group stages. Obviously, they play Celtic this Thursday night. I just think it's indicative of a club that's got its act together, is well run. You know, in terms of the kind of processes that they put in place for their recruitment. You look at the kind of the approach that they've taken, you know, with, yes, they've got Zlatan and they've got Simon Kjær, two experienced players either end of the pitch. But other than that, it's a very young team. And Stefano Pioli, I mean, in very simple terms, plays players in their best positions. And has got the best out of them. So, for example, I think one of the real surprises since lockdown is Hakan Çalhanoğlu, who's been extraordinary for them. 17 goals and assists in 12 games, scores from outside the area. You know, has been, I would say, the key to that team, as much as Zlatan has, certainly in getting the tick going forward. Because they've won games without Zlatan. Let's not forget that. I mean, they're undefeated without Zlatan in the team as well. I mean, when he had COVID, they had those few crazy games in the Europa League against Bodo Glimt and Rio Ave with the 24 penalties. I think what's encouraging about them is they look like a well put together team that can defend, that can attack. And they've got players with upside. There are lots of young players on that team who've either in the last 9 months started to really fulfill and kick on in their potential. The likes of Benacer, Teo Hernandez. And then you look at the guys that they've recently signed. Salamakers in January, who's doing a really good job for them on the right. Rafael Leao starting to come good. He was their big summer signing a year ago, got an assist in the derby, seems to be able to score without really doing much. So can they win the title? I think they're still an outsider. You know, I mean, they haven't been in the Champions League since 2014, which has really hurt them. Their objective is to get back into the top four first. I think that's going to be tricky. But I think one of the things that stands in their favour, stands in Atalanta's favour, stands in Sassuolo's favour, is that they've got the same managers last season. They're building on the momentum that they ended last season with. And they've got more or less the same squad with a few really good additions in there as well. So it's looking good for Milan, James.
Mm. And while we think that the likes of Inter and probably Juve will get themselves together sooner or later, Milan at the moment are building up quite a nice head start. What do you think about their prospects then in Glasgow on Thursday?
I think their prospects are good. I mean, Celtic lost the old firm, you know, against Rangers at the weekend. You know, you never can tell at the moment. I think Milan have got consistency. If anything, they've been a little bit looser in the Europa League because those games have tended to coincide with a few injuries, a few COVID positives. They've rotated in that competition. For example, you see Sandro Tonali might come into the team for that game after it was Benacer and Kessié in the derby. So I think it depends on how he rotates. But Zlatan's Zlatan. I mean, you know, as he keeps saying, you know, if I was in the kind of condition now that I was in my 20s, or if I had the body of a 20-year-old, no one would stop me. And guess what? No one can stop me now either. And to be honest, he's backing it up. So if Zlatan's playing on Thursday, sorry, Celtic, I don't see much chance for you.
They're already talking about giving him a new contract. For all that he's Zlatan, how long can he keep this up?
I think the great thing is, I mean, he's got Mino Raiola saying in his ear. I think Mino's quite good with Zlatan because he just plays to his ego, which is like, oh, a player like you can't be finishing your career in the States. Yeah, you're better than that. You've still got so much more to offer. You can still cut it at the highest levels, Zlatan. And I think he believes it. I mean, he was talking up them winning the title. I think he's probably got another couple of years. Obviously, it'll depend on injuries. I mean, it's remarkable that he came back from that knee injury he suffered against Man United, suffered for Manchester United when he was there. He has players around him who enable Zlatan to be the best Zlatan at the moment, which is he's got young, fresh players who are able to press and do a lot of running, which he can't. And just allow him to go about dominating centre-backs, scoring goals. I think we've probably still got another couple of years of Zlatan, and you know, that's indicative of, you know, that generation of players having a higher state of professionalisation than the generation that went before, better nutritioning, better conditioning. You know, we're seeing, I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo is going to probably play until he's 45. So, you know, I think this is the new normal. In many respects.
Right, particularly if they're surrounded by 20-year-old bodies. Nice. Which he is obviously in the Milan side at the moment under Pioli. Brilliant. Well, that's Milan on top of the table with Zlatan in Serie A. And Alvaro, way back at the start, you mentioned David Silva's Real Sociedad, who are top of La Liga. Do you want to just see us out with a few words on them?
Of course, yes. They beat Betis this weekend. It was a controversial game because there were a couple of decisions that went in Real Sociedad's favor. I think that couldn't be overlooked. But anyway, the performance of Real Sociedad was very professional there. Portu, Oyarzabal and Januzaj scored the goals and they got the victory at Benito Villamarín. And Real Sociedad are playing well. They got a nice style and they really want to put it into practice. They've got a local manager and players like David Silva, Mikel Merino, Adnan Januzaj in the midfield. Overall, they are doing very well. They are qualified for the Europa League this season. And in fact, you can see that some of the Real Sociedad players are becoming important elsewhere. For example, the only goal that Spain scored in the international break in October was fabricated by two Real Sociedad players. Mikel Merino gave the assist and Oyarzabal scored a goal. It's very, very impressive. I don't think that they will be able to win La Liga, obviously, but maybe they are a candidate to qualify for Champions League. At the minute, with these 10 points they've got, they get a projection of 69 points at the end of the season, and that should do to qualify for Champions League.
Wow, and they've got Kosovo's Adnan Januzaj playing for them.
Yes, Januzaj, you should see him now. I mean, I think that he has worked a lot on the gym as well, a little bit like Canales, the player from Betis, and that is paying off for him. I mean, he doesn't play every single game for Real Sociedad. He comes in, comes off, but every time he plays, he's adding some quality touch to the team.
Okay, who they got on Thursday night?
They are playing against Rijeka in the Europa League, and they are also lined
Napoli's
up with
group.
Napoli in the Europa League, so that's going to be really interesting.
Napoli were absolutely flying after that 4-1 win over Atalanta. They are hosting AZ Alkmaar.
After they didn't fly to Turin.
Oh, yeah. Hey. Mm. Well, there you go, listener. That hopefully set you up for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night in Europe. Of course, you can catch up with Jules and Rafa and James and myself on The Goal Show, bringing you informed comment and action across the Champions League group stages on Tuesday and Wednesday on BT Sport. I look forward to you joining us there. Totally Football Show returns on Thursday morning, so hopefully you'll be along for that one too. For now, it's many, many thanks to Alvaro, Jules, Rafa and James and producer Charlie and you, listener. Have a super week and we'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of The Athletic Podcast Network.
Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.